This podcast is brought to you by Lanco Group, your business partner for engineering solutions. You are listening to FNR Football Nation Radio.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR Football Nation Radio.
Hello, I'm your host, Louise Taffer, with Josh Parrish. Joining me here in the studio, we are at the end of another week. Coming up over the weekend are some massive games, including the Matildas, who open their FIFA Women's World Cup campaign in France. Before that, though, the Socceroos are taking on Korea Republic in an international friendly tonight at 9 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. Don't miss out on that. We'll also be joined by a special guest at 5:30 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard to go through the match preview ahead of the Socceroos game. But before we get there, Matildas takes precedent right now because they are just hours away, really, from the opening of the FIFA Women's World Cup. Unfortunately, overnight, we have heard that there are some injury news and injury news that has come out surrounding two players. One in particular will be sent home. That is confirmed. It's not really looking good for the Matildas. I mean, this is not what they want heading into the FIFA Women's World Cup. It's practically the eve.
Yeah, it's terrible timing, obviously, but this is why you have players on standby and, you know, depth in the not only the squad but the player pool. Laura Alloway going down, though, and just covering it on the show before, but she was like just the only central defender they had in the squad to back up, you know, Alana Kennedy and Claire Polkinghorne. And they've brought in Carly Rosbacken, who is a left back.
She's unproven.
She's uncapped.
She's 18.
She's played left back and midfield, as you say, for Canberra United. She's a good player, but I just think it's an odd decision when you've got a lot of W League centre backs who could have been brought into the fold to replace Alloway. Players like Jenna McCormick or Liz Ralston, who I think would have been more suitable for in terms of squad numbers and balance. Now they're taking five fullbacks with them. Plus you've got players like Kellen Knight, Russo, and, you know, even Caitlin Ford, who can step in at fullback. That's like eight options at fullback. And the only other backup you've got is already in the starting 11, which is Steph Catley. So I'm not sure who else steps in at central defence if, you know, there's an injury. I guess it will have to be Catley. But that leaves you open at left back, where we've really highlighted the fact that there's a lack of, you know, quality options there that are on the same international level. So I'm just really puzzled by the decision to bring in Rosbacken.
Remember in the international friendly against Argentina here in Melbourne, what Ante Milicic did was, for sparing 5 minutes, he put Elise Kellon-Knight as centre-back while Laura Alloway was making her way off the pitch, again due to another injury. So that is why it's really important to use these international friendlies to work out who might be versatile in other positions and who might not, because now their squad is really going to be tested. And you can also see why Alan Stajic used to do this as well. He used to play players out of position so he could have that squad depth and could take a Steph Catley or, you know, an Elise Kellon-Knight over that he could fill in different areas on the pitch if he needed to.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, I mean, Kellon-Knight could be an option, but, you know, it's disappointing because you really need to have that option in midfield with Kellon-Knight, because we've been decrying the fact that she was always out of position at left back. Moving into centre back just leaves that gaping hole in the midfield once again. You've got other options there, but no one offers the same thing that at least Kellon-Knight does. So it's basically like you can't cover your feet and your head at the same time. And they've left themselves in a position where any injury in the back line is going to cause some really serious problems.
It's not good. As I said at the start, this is not what the Matildas need on the eve of the FIFA Women's World Cup. And that isn't the only injury news that has come out of the Matildas camp. We've also heard that the youngest player in the team, 16-year-old Mary Fowler, has pulled up with a hamstring issue. We're not sure as to what the extent of that is, but if we lose Mary Fowler as well, that is another attacking option that we just don't have.
Yeah. Look, It's difficult. I think Mary Fowler, obviously still under the cloud, we don't know whether she'll be withdrawn from the squad or not. And it's difficult when you're right on the eve of the first game. I'm not sure what the deadline is that they have, the decision deadline. But I don't think that's crucial. I think she was there mostly for experience. She's also sort of an X factor that could have been used in a pinch if you're after a goal. But given that they have so much attacking quality, you know, I don't think that's as big a blow as losing Alloway. It's just because of squad depth. And I think you've got players that you can bring in the forward line to replace Fowler, who would do just as good a job.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR. Louise Taffer with Josh Parrish joining me here in the studio. We are going to go to our first guest, Marissa Lordanik, who joins us now all the way from France. Bonjour, Marissa.
Bonjour, everyone. How are we?
We're doing well. How are you going over there? Tell us what France is like at the moment. It must be absolutely buzzing given the Women's World Cup is just around the corner.
It's really funny you say that, actually. You wouldn't know there's a major tournament starting literally today in France. You know, you walk out of the airport and there's not much around. You walk around Paris and, again, there's not much around. The best kind of indication that there is a World Cup going on was the big Nike store down at Le Hall, the, you know, giant posters with all the Nike teams, all of the displayed everywhere. But it's really funny. It's not as big as I expected it. I'm hoping today as we get closer to kickoff and closer to the stadium, it'll get a bit more hype.
Yeah, absolutely, Marissa. It's a little bit disappointing that, you know, they're not promoting it in the streets. There's not billboards everywhere, but I'm not sure if that's a reflection of how big the women's game is in France. However, this French team seems to be quite strong. So, you know, I would have thought they'd be promoting it, given that they've got the chance to become both men's and women's champions at the same time.
Yeah, you would have thought, you know, even just, you know, watching TV, you put on L'Equipe, the French sports channel and stuff, and there's plenty of coverage of the Nations League, of Roland Garros, the French Open and whatnot, but it just doesn't seem to be as saturated as what we would, you know, come to expect from a men's World Cup.
Yeah, very disappointing, but hopefully, you know, obviously that's not going to affect the Matildas, and the Matildas have had a bit of an injury crisis in the last couple of days with Laura Alloway dropping out of the squad due to injury. Now Mary Fowler's under an injury cloud after going down in training. What do you think about how that injury will affect the team? And do you think that Carly Rosbacken is the right player to have brought in to replace Alloway?
I'm really devastated for Laura because she had such a good W League season with Victory, and that's, you know, I reckon a big part of why she was selected. And, you know, it was all very kind of positive surrounding her and whatnot. So I'm devastated for her. The second decision it's interesting because there were, you know, murmurs that she was at least on the fringes before the squad was announced. I think it does have a lot to do with the fact that she did so well for the young Matildas in the under-19s Asian Championship qualifying. And, you know, Gary Van Egmond is the coach of that. So he, in first hand, and obviously his opinion and his insights are very valuable to Ante Milicic, and he's taken that on board when, you know, ultimately selecting her. As for Mary Fowler, I hadn't even heard that news. So it's disappointing for her because obviously there was, you know, a great chance to make history and, you know.
I think we've just lost Marissa, but we'll try and get her back on the line. You are listening to Evenings on FNR. Louise and Josh here in the studio. We're just talking about the latest Matildas injury news. We've heard that Laura Alloway will be sent on the next plane back to Australia, or she might stay there and watch the Matildas games at the FIFA World Cup. But she's out of the squad, which is just heartbreaking for her. Marissa was just touching on the fact that, you know, she had such a great season for Melbourne Victory in the W League, and, you know, you're practically there. You're in France. You're, you know, hours away from starting the Women's World Cup, and you come down with an injury. Marissa, are you there?
I am.
Oh, we just lost you. Yeah, sorry. You were saying about Laura Alloway.
Yeah, and Mary Fowler as well. You know, it's disappointing that she is under a potential cloud, but again, I don't think it's as big a loss as Galloway, who, you know, is, we've only got three recognised centre-backs in the squad. So if something happens to, then we're a bit stuffed. So the family, you don't want anyone getting injured before a World Cup. It's awful. It's not pleasant. But, yeah, the Galloway one is a bit bigger than, I reckon, the Fowler one. And she still has the potential, I suppose, to come good.
What will Ante Milicic do in terms of defence now? Which other players do you think he might be able to slot back into defence? Josh and I were touching on potentially Elise Kelo-Knight if need be.
Yeah, I think it's kind of a toss-up between Steph Catley and Elise Kelo-Knight in that centre-back role. And then obviously we've got Gemma Simon, we've got Tegan Allen, we've got now Ross Backen as well to fill in the full-back spot. So it's a shame. Like, we know that, you know, KK and Catley can do the job in centre-back, but they're just so much more influential and important in their other roles. So it's not ideal, but it is what it is.
What do you make of the friendly performances from the Matildas? Obviously, that 3-0 loss to the Netherlands, a bit of a shock, that scoreline. What did you make of the team's performance? And do you think it highlighted any particular areas of concern, or am I reading too much into a pre-World Cup friendly game?
I think the most concerning thing for me with that performance was just some of the defensive decision-making and set up and all that kind of stuff. I don't know if anyone's seen the defending for the first goal we conceded. You take a screenshot of just before the ball gets played. There's a whole group of green jerseys just by themselves, and then there's a whole group behind them of orange jerseys completely isolated. And it's no surprise then that one of those orange jerseys ended up scoring because they were just completely unmarked. So that was my biggest concern, just the kind of shakiness from, you know, defending set pieces, because we can't afford to be giving away easy goals or just, you know, not marking at all. We know we've got the talent up forward and we know that there'll be opportunities to score. We just need to take them. So my only concern was just those defensive frailties, but I have no doubt that the team would have looked back on it and would be tightening it up.
Yeah, very concerning, because set pieces have actually been, I would have thought, a strong suit of the Matildas in years past. So to line up like that, I did see, I think you posted that screenshot on Twitter, Marissa, and, you know, it was a bit puzzling, the lack of marking that was going on, a lot of players marking space and not players over at the back post. But there was one other area of concern I wanted to highlight, and that was in midfield. Obviously, Elise Kelo-Knight didn't play, and we had Emily Van Egmond sort of on by herself in that holding midfield role with Ford and Tamika Butt pushed further up. She seemed to struggle and be a little bit isolated.
Yeah, it's interesting. So Kate Ford, they kind of have played her in the number 10 position for both the US friendly and the Netherlands one. We saw that, you know, it can work in the US game because, you know, she scored that excellent goal. But even though she did well in that game, you could see that the midfield kind of did suffer in a way, because it was in it like we were playing with only two midfielders. And I don't think we can afford to do that. So any kind of potential benefit we got from Ford playing as the didn't kind of compensate for the loss that we had by not having kind of three strong recognised midfielders. So I have to agree in the sense that we should be, you know, keeping forward. That's what she does best. And the fact that KK will or has should have overcome whatever little injury was preventing her from playing in the Netherlands game, it should be all good and she should be in contention to start against Italy.
The Matildas open the group stage against Italy. What are we expecting from Italy?
They're a strong side. Like, they've had a really good kind of last couple of years. They were very strong in the Euro qualifying. They've had a really good 2019 as well. They've played a lot of games, but they've only lost one, and that was on penalties in the, I think it was the Cyprus Cup final or the Algarve Cup final. So they've had a really good preparation. So we can't underestimate them. And I reckon that, you know, the coaching setup wouldn't underestimate them. I reckon they've really, you know, taken the time to prepare, to look into how they're going to play and how we're going to, you know, kind of attack the Italian lineup.
Yeah, it's going to be a fascinating contest. 9 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time, the kickoff. So fantastic time slot for women's football in this country on a Sunday night. I think this will be a huge viewership around the country. And, you know, I really can't wait for this tournament. We've highlighted a lot of potential, you know, maybe concern trolling a little bit with this team, but they are a very strong outfit. And I do think they will step up when the time comes. And especially on this big stage, I think this could be, you know, a really memorable tournament for the Matildas.
Absolutely, because, you know, it's knockout football. You're only as good as what happens on the day, and there's nothing to suggest that the Matildas can't pull out their absolute best when it's required.
Well, Marissa, I think we'll leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us all the way from France. We'll be touching base with you throughout the tournament. Enjoy the games, enjoy Paris, and we'll speak to you again soon.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Marissa Lordanik joining us on the line from the host country of the Women's World Cup. It starts
Paris.
This weekend.
Bonjour.
Yes, she's in Paris. Unfortunately, not a lot of marketing or publicity going on.
I'm sure it'll build up as soon as the tournament gets underway and into it all.
Especially if France wins the opening game. I mean, they're a very patriotic, nationalist kind of country. So if France puts a few goals past South Korea tomorrow morning, then I think the hype train will begin.
Oh, for sure. One thing I wanted to ask you, now that we know that Laura Alloway won't be included in the Matildas squad moving forward, which is just unfortunate, it poses a lot of headaches and a few tweaks for Ante Milicic. But that's why he's there. He's very capable of tweaking and changing the squad to suit the way the Matildas will play heading into these three group stage games. Could we see him changing the formation to suit the play now that Laura Alloway isn't there?
I don't think so. I think he'll go with the same sort of starting 11. I'm expecting, well, I mean, I could probably name the starting 11 for the opening game.
Always. So you don't think he would potentially tweak the back line, maybe go to a back three if need be?
I don't think so, because that sort of puts more strain on the central defence. You know, you have to have more players in there and they're already thin. Mm. Once you start moving Catley into a back three, and then you have to bring a wing back in. And, you know, I think that really upsets the preparation. I think what you will see is, I think coming in for Legazo will be Elise Kellen-Knight. Yep. So you'll see Kellen-Knight playing alongside Van Egmond and Butt in midfield. Maybe Sam Kerr moved, I hope, up front. I hope out to the left, and then Caitlin Ford playing in the number 9 role so Sam Kerr can come inside and play off her. And then Hayley Rasso, I think, will probably maintain her starting position on the right-hand flank. So I think you're only going to see one change in the starting 11 for the Matildas game versus Italy, and I think it will be Legazo drops to the bench in favour of Elise Kellen-Knight.
I agree with you in the sense that Hayley Rasso will start. She was outstanding. She was very
lively
in the game against the Netherlands, and she's definitely earned a starting position in the Matildas squad in the opening game against Italy.
There is one player I would love to see come in, and that is obviously Katrina Gorry. I keep banging this drum over and over again, but I just think she's such a special footballer who the Matildas haven't used to their, you know, advantage in recent years. I think she could definitely come in for Van Egmond with Kellen-Knight, totally capable of playing as a sole holder. Then you have Gorry as the creative passing midfielder, and Tamika Yallop, I should say now, as the sort of box-to-box energy player. I think that would just be a perfect combination. But Katrina Gorry, obviously she's coming off an ankle ligament injury, so maybe that's playing into things. She never seems to be appreciated like she should do, and I think Australia is honestly wasted a lot of her prime. I would love to see her players from the start, because I thought Emily Van Egmond, without her usual partner in midfield, was just had a complete disaster of a game against the Netherlands. So I'm a little bit worried about the centre of the park. I think that's one change that should be made, but I don't think you'll see it from the first game.
I'm a little bit worried about Emily Van Egmond because we saw in the match against the Netherlands. Now, I don't want to pick on her, but she wasn't marking her player as tight as she could, and ultimately the Netherlands scored and it put them ahead. So I just don't know. It's a little bit concerning. It all throws
a bit of
a spanner in the works now that, you know, if Kellen-Knight does have to move into defence, then as you say, we lose that quality from the midfield, and it's just...
It creates these flow-on problems,
it
right?
It does. It's a ripple effect.
Yeah.
It's not what we need.
Emily Van Egmond reminds me in a lot of ways of Aaron Moy, actually. If you're going for the cross-national team comparison, she has the same sort of technical ability, and she can ping passes from right to left, left to right. You can see that 40-yard cross-field ball, and she'll hit the winger on the chest. Like, she's got that ability in her locker. But there's all the other parts of her game, the kind of movement off the ball. She's very left, she's very slow, and she doesn't be able to escape her marker. Defensively, she's a bit of a turnstile, as you said. She wasn't marking up. We saw that in the USA game as well. Matilda's conceded at least one of the goals because, she just lack of defensive awareness. So there's so many limitations to her game, but I think coaches are sort of, for lack of a better word, seduced by her technical capacities and her ability to just, spray such accurate passes that, some of the other areas of her game that are major shortcomings are overlooked. I think she's a limited, player in a lot of ways. She's got those very particular elite skills and then very, very specific failings as a footballer. Mm. And without a player alongside her who complements her, like Kellen Knight does, Kellen Knight has to move into the back line. Emily Van Egmond has to come out of the midfield straight away because she'll be exposed.
I agree with you. You're listening to Evenings on FNR. Let us know what you think. Tweet to us at FNR_radio. Or if you are joining us on Facebook Live, comment below and we'll get through your comments over the next half an hour. We're talking the Matildas because the FIFA Women's World Cup is just hours away from starting. We've already had someone come through on Facebook Live, and I wish George Denikian was here to pronounce his name because it is in Greek. Unfortunately, I don't know how to pronounce your name, but he says hello from Greece. Hello to you, and we're delighted to know that you're listening to us all the way over there in Europe. Of course, FNR, you can stream all around the world. So, that is FNR and the Matildas are just a couple of sleeps away from their opening game against Italy. I think that, Josh, we need to be realistic about where the Matildas will place overall at this FIFA Women's World Cup. There's been a lot of hype saying that they're going to win it. I am Australian. I was born here. I support the Socceroos. I support the Matildas. But as much as I want to say that they're going to win it, I think it's going to be very difficult. We've seen the competition. We saw how tough it was against the Netherlands. We saw how tough it was against the USA. They're just two opponents. And there's a lot of other countries who have just exceeded expectations so far. But I think for the Matildas, it will be a little bit difficult.
Yeah, I do think it's a stretch to say that they're going to win the whole thing. I think a semi-final would be a sensational achievement. And I think that's what they should be aiming for. Anything beyond that is a bonus. You've got the powerhouse nations in the women's game. France, the host nation, they've got a fantastic team now. USA, always favourites. Germany have won a World Cup. England, there's so many big teams, quality teams. The Scandinavian teams as well always tend to do well. Netherlands are a big threat, as we saw. They just beat the Matildas 3-0 the other day. So I would probably pick England to win it at this point. I really do like their team.
Really?
They're in such good form. I think I was skeptical of the appointment of Phil Neville to begin with, but he's really come through for them recently, and they've had some really impressive results. They've knocked off Denmark and Spain recently in friendlies. They won the, I think they won the She Believes Cup. Yeah, they did. They got a draw against the USA. They beat Brazil and Japan. I think they've got a great team. I'm really excited about this England lineup, much more so than I was about the men's team in the last World Cup. And, they've got plenty of ability throughout the squad. So, yeah, that would probably be my tip to win the whole thing. What about you?
I am going Netherlands.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right.
A smoky.
Yeah, that would be a huge result. I mean, they've come in as, eighth in the world, was it? Or seventh?
Eighth, yep. Around about there. But I just think that they've just got so much quality at the moment. I think the top four, I would have Netherlands, USA, England, and the host country, France, and then the Matildas just.
Yep. Yeah, no, that's fair.
But in Canada, at the last FIFA Women's World Cup, the Matildas made it to the last eight, the quarterfinals. I think a fail mark for the Matildas would be not getting out of the group. Mm. Surely they have to get out of the group.
I think they will, yeah.
If they top the group, then it'll be better for us because we'll have a day in lieu, so we'll have an extra day up our sleeve, which in the scheme of things, it doesn't sound like much, but it is. Having an extra day to recover and, rest will be really beneficial for the team. So if they can top the group, that would be fantastic. But again, it seems straightforward. But then again, as George Danikian always says, games are not won on paper.
No, they are not. Louise, we're going to take a very quick break, but on the other side, we'll be speaking to our friend from K-League United, the editor-in-chief, Ryan Walters, who obviously has a show here on the station. We'll be talking all things South Korea in the build-up to tonight's friendly against the Socceroos, so stay tuned.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Louise Taffer with Josh Parrish joining me here in the studio. And of course, it's all guns blazing now for both of our national teams. The Socceroos will face Korea Republic tonight in front of a sellout crowd, more than 54,000 there in Korea. And joining us now to talk all about it is Editor-in-Chief of K-League United, Ryan Walters. Ryan, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Pleasure to be here as always.
Ryan, it's great to speak to you. Let's start with this squad selected by Paolo Bento. A pretty strong outfit, including Son Heung-min, who's only just played in the Champions League final. Are you happy with Bento's selections?
Well, there's a lot of contention right now about this squad selection, and I'm kind of in the camp that wishes it looked a little bit different. This is a strong lineup, like you say. Son Heung-min is there, which, I mean, the talent that he brings to this team, it's hard to argue against him being a part of the squad, but this is an area where I think it's interesting having to go up against an Australian side where obviously Graham Arnold is kind of looking for other players. And in a friendly like this, I kind of wish Korea was doing something similar, because a lot of the players that are in this squad, they're known quantities. We know what we're going to get out of them. And at this stage in the World Cup cycle, I just would like to see some more players with a little bit less experience get into these games, especially, like you were saying in the lead-in, this is the first match in Busan in a while, and it's drawn a lot of attention. So get these players out there in front of a huge crowd and get them used to that international atmosphere when, you know, it's a friendly match. If you lose, it's not the end of the world. So I would have liked to have seen a few more new names brought in, but, you know, again, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And last time Korea took the field, they played really well against some strong South American opposition. So I see why he went with this selection, but there are some names that I would have liked to have seen on the list.
And Josh touched on the fact that Son Heung-min was included in the squad. He only just played off in the UEFA Champions League final. Unfortunately, the result didn't go in his favour. How do you think he'll be, you know, going into this match? Will it be, you know, more him raring to go, or will he be a bit more subdued?
Well, I mean, he's always Korea's Iron Man. He just keeps showing up and keeps doing his best. The problem usually is that he's not played in his best position. The last two friendlies, he was played up top in a 4-1-3-2 both times. And I would expect the same. I think if they're going to call him in, then Paolo Bento is going to put him up top, because Korea, we don't really have anybody that's scoring goals right now. So I think they're going to be looking to him to do that. But again, when it comes back to the squad selection and Sonny being in this list, I really would have liked to have seen him get a break. I mean, the guy's just been going forever right now, and he's been doing it at such a high level. And you worry about him being able to keep it up coming into these games like this, where, you know, Australia is clearly coming in looking at who they can get. And I think it would have been an opportunity for Korea to do that. But Son, he's here. He's going to be used. He's the talisman. I'd expect him to start and maybe only go 60 minutes, depending on how things go. But I would be really surprised if he's not started up top as he usually is.
You mentioned if it ain't broke, don't fix it, Ryan. Is it broken? Is it working properly? How do you reflect on the Asian Cup exit? Because I thought there were some, obviously you went out to the eventual winners, but I thought there were maybe a few mistakes made in that game that maybe cost Korea.
Yeah, with the national team right now, I think the thing is that they just lack a clinical finisher. And I think that's why Son is put up there so often, and it looked like Hwang Hee-jo was going to be that guy for a little while. He had an amazing Asian Games last year, and then in the Asian Cup, he was all right. He didn't have a bad tournament, but they're just not ruthless enough up top right now. And you know, they get possession in most games. Their passing accuracy is fantastic, but they just don't have that difference maker in front of the net right now. And I think opposing teams know that. So, yeah, I mean, the last time out, they managed to get a good result against Colombia here in Korea, and that's never an easy thing to do. But there's still, in a lot of ways, it's just these grinding matches that they play, and they do well in the midfield. But, yeah, up top, I think, is the big question mark yet again coming into this set of friendlies. And that's where I'm going to be watching a lot right now, because I mentioned Hwang Hee-jo, and he's somebody that just today rumors came out that he might be moving to MLS to join Hwang In-bum in Vancouver. Obviously, those are just rumors, but I think he's somebody that plays well when he needs to. He had an amazing Asian Games when military exemption was on the line. He played really well in J-League when he had something to prove. So I think he'll be one to watch. And it's also, I don't know how many more chances Hwang Hee-chan's going to get up here, because like you say, there are some things that didn't go well in Asia. And I think Hwang Hee-chan just did not have a good tournament. And you've got to wonder how many more times he's going to be called in before the plug is pulled on that experiment.
Lacking a clinical finisher. I mean, welcome to the club, Ryan. We got jackets made here. You mentioned Hwang In-bum, who's playing for Vancouver. Really, excuse my pronunciation there, but I was super impressed with him at the Asian Cup. And then he made that move to MLS, which to me seemed a bit of a sideways one, given how well he performed in the middle of the park. I mean, what's going on with him? Does he need a new agent, or is this actually a good move for him?
Well, I think two things, yes and no. I think he probably does need a new agent. There was none of this was officially confirmed, but there were some reports out after that move that was made that Hwang wanted to move to Germany, just like EJ Sung did last year. He wanted to make a move over maybe to Bundesliga, but to get his foot in the door in Europe. And there were some, again, reported shady agent sideways deals going on that he didn't end up there, and he ended up in Vancouver, which wasn't necessarily his first choice, but he has been lights out for the Whitecaps over in MLS. And I think it's a really good move for him. He's still really young, and I think MLS is a growing league. It's a league that plays at a very different pace than K-League, and certainly K-League 2, which is where Hwang In-bum has spent most of his time. He was with Daejeon Citizen for a while, and then he was doing his military service with Asama Gunghwa. And he was never really challenged to be better than he was. I think a lot of times he stepped on the field as the best player, and that's just not the case for him in MLS. And I think it's a really good step for him to get out of his comfort zone, to get into a league where obviously Korean is not the first language, and to play in a more international setting as well, because with Daejeon, they didn't have a lot of foreign players. And then obviously with the military team, there are no foreign players. So I think he does have European ambitions, and I think he has the talent to get there. But I do think MLS was a good move for him, and I'm really curious to see how he fits into the midfield in these friendlies, because there's a big opening in the midfield right now with Ki Sung-young retiring from the national team and nobody really taking that spot yet. And I think it could be Hwang In-bum. So we'll see how it goes for him.
One of the Australian players is currently over there in the K-League at the moment, and that is Adam Taggart. Now, given that he's played, a couple of months there in Korea, how do you think that'll go into this game for him? Will it benefit him?
I definitely think so. I mean, I'm personally hoping for a 3-2 thriller with Taggart getting a brace and then Korea getting a late winner. He has fitted really well in Suwon. Suwon is a team that I don't think there was a ton expected of them coming into the season, because they had a disappointing year last year. But he's paired up really well with Dejan Damjanovic up top. I think he's learned a lot about the league from Dejan. Well, we had Adam on our podcast a little bit earlier in the year, and we're just talking about the transition. And he really hit the ground running, which is not easy to do here. He's petered off a little bit lately, but I do think that he's going to prove to be a difference maker for Suwon, and they're trying to get the FA Cup run going, which could see him in ACL next year. And I think that this is something that, you know, we've both talked about not having a clinical finisher. And I think if he can get some confidence at the national team level in this match, you know, he doesn't have to travel very far for it, so that's nice. And I think it could be good for him in a lot of ways to maybe get back onto the national team more often and to get into the mindset of some Korean fans here that might not be paying attention to Suwon as much. But he's looked good in stretches. He looked great in stretches for Suwon. Overall, I think he was a good signing, and I hope that this is another kind of coming out party of sorts for him.
Well, we do too, Ryan. I mean, he's sort of on the station, the great white hope of Australian striking stocks. I mean, if you look elsewhere, the cupboard is pretty bare. We haven't had anyone who's been able to both, you know, score consistently at club level and also fit into Graham Arnold's system as playing as a sort of lone frontman. I mean, certainly Jamie McLaren hasn't fitted that bill. You know, it doesn't suit the system. So, I mean, Adam Taggart, just how good has he been? Because I've been pretty stunned by how quickly he's got first team football over in Korea. You know, he's fitting so well, competing with, you know, number nine spots in Asia is so difficult for Australian players because there's usually so many talented Brazilians and so forth in those leagues. But, you know, as you say, he's hit the ground running.
Yeah, I think he's benefited from the Asian player quota. There's something that we talk about a lot, that clubs don't take advantage of this. And I think Suwon was really smart to finally go and do that, because in K-League, there are three foreign roster spots for anybody in the world and then one additional for anybody in Asia. And most of the times when that's an Australian player, that's a center back. But I think Suwon did really well here to look for a striker in that position. And Adams made the most of it. I think anytime you've got Yum Ki-hoon giving you service, things are going to go pretty well. Yum Ki-hoon's getting up there in age, but that left foot still has a lot of magic in it. And also, Elvis Sterich is in the midfield right behind him, and Elvis Sterich has just been a beast in the midfield. He is a delight to watch, and he sets things up so well. So Taggart is in a good situation there. I think he's got a lot of talent around him at that team. They haven't been able to do it in the league just yet, but again, they've got a good FA Cup run going, and I think they have enough pieces in place to supplement his game. And as far as being a target man, he's been able to do that a bit. I think he's really good at hold-up play, but the thing that I like about him that lacks a lot of times in K-League or even with the Korean national team is he is just, again, the word comes to mind, ruthless in the box. He's just always there. And, you know, he's not going to score highlight goals all the time, but he's going to score goals. And I'll take that 10 times out of 10. I don't care about it being, well, I do care about it being curled in from 40 yards out. Let's not kid ourselves. It's fun. But I like his tenacity near the goal. And I hope that that's something that carries over onto the national team level.
We'll take a 6-yard tap in any day of the week with the Socceroos scoring woes.
Right.
You've said that this squad is mainly sort of the first team, the known quantities and so forth. Is there anyone who's been selected that you're looking forward to maybe getting an opportunity, a younger player or someone who hasn't really cracked the national team yet?
Well, there are a lot of names on the list. I think Na Sang Ho is somebody that I'm really interested in because he made a big move over to J-League last year and it hasn't fully worked out with him. He is with league leaders Tokyo over there right now, but it's interesting to see how he'll fit in. Park Sung-ho is another person. He was one of the Barca boys along with Lee Sang-woo, and they're kind of getting on in their career. And again, the midfield is an area where there's a really big opening right now, and I do think it's going to be Hwang Ae-bum, like I said, and EJ Sung could play in the middle, but I think there is that opportunity for Park Sung-ho to finally stamp his claim on the senior national team, because he and Lee Sang-woo were huge for the youth team, but he hasn't really made that step up to the national team level yet. So he's definitely one to watch there. And again, I think he and Lee Sang-woo are both players that need to prove themselves again at this level. So, and those are two young guys that are going to hopefully be a big part of the World Cup qualification and hopefully a big part of the World Cup run. So now is really the time for him and, again, Lee Sang-woo to step up and make that leap up to the next level.
And, Ryan, before we let you go, what is your score prediction? Korea Republic taking on the Socceroos?
Well, you know what? I want to stick with my 3-2 entertaining end-to-end. Realistically, though, I think Korea is really going to be up for this, playing in Busan for the first time in 15 years in front of a huge crowd. And I'm not sure, again, I love the choice by the Socceroos to see what other talent is there, but I'm not sure they're going to be able to keep up with this iteration of Korea. I'm going to say 2-1. I'll be nice and say 2-1. I wanted to say 2-0, but the Socceroos will get on the board, sure.
Yeah, look, I don't share your confidence, Ryan. I really think this experimental Socceroos team is going to get taught a lesson by the Korean first teamers, but that's not really what it's about, obviously. It's a friendly match trying to test things out and see what players can come in and contribute, and hopefully, as you say, Adam Taggart can get on the score sheet. Ryan, thank you so much for coming on. Make sure, if you're interested in Korean football, to our listeners, make sure you tune into the K-League United podcast, which can also be heard here on FNR Football Nation Radio. But Ryan, thanks so much for your input.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Ryan Walters, Editor-in-Chief of K-League United, giving us a full rundown of all of the Korean side that's going to be shaping up to face the Socceroos this evening. I think it's going to get a little bit ugly, to be honest. I'm going 4-1 to Korea, just based on the fact that Korea's picked their first team and Australia's picked this unproven experimental squad. The result, to be honest, is not important, but and I actually agree with Ryan that Graham Arnold's maybe made the right call to experiment, giving players an opportunity to break, make their way into the national team. But, you know, I think it's going to be difficult for them in front of a really big, passionate crowd.
I share your point. I think that it will be very difficult for this experimental Socceroos side. I don't think, you know, they might score one goal, but it'll be hard. It'll be very hard. But then again, maybe Adam Taggart might, you know, use his experience from the K-League to help, you know, him get into better positions and maybe even score a couple.
Yeah, well, look, I hope he puts together a good display, because
we want to see him moving forward.
I want to see him as the starting number nine. I really do. I think, you know, this move overseas has proven that he can mix it at a high level, especially in Asia, can be an effective player. He doesn't have a Dejan Damjanovic to play off in the Socceroos, if only. But yeah, so that's a different challenge to play as the lone front man. But as Ryan says, he's been really ruthless in the box this season, and we haven't had that presence for a long time in the national team. So, you know, I think he can do some pretty impressive things for the Socceroos. This game might be a bit tough, considering, you know, the team will likely be on the back foot for the majority. But, you know, I would like to see him retained in the Socceroos squad for some months to come, given a real crack.
And we heard that Aziz Baich will wear the captain's armband, thanks to Graham Arnold. That game kicking off at 9 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time, 8 p.m. local time there in Korea Republic. It'll be live on Fox Sports and also Channel 10. Athos. My co-host changes every night, and the pleasure is mine, Josh.
Yeah, look, it's perfectly fine, Lucy.
I always get that, don't I? Anyway, Josh, we're going to take a quick break, but coming up is all of our European news, including transfers.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Louise Taffer with Josh Parrish joining me here in the studio. And Josh, remember, you can get involved if you want to call us or tweet to us or write to us on Facebook.
We've had a question come through on the socials, actually, Louise.
Yes.
What's that interesting T-shirt design you're wearing today?
It is actually Sam Kerr doing a backflip.
Yeah, it's a little obscured by the long locks, but yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Thanks to Football Cult,
who have sent me a couple of T-shirts, including another one, which I think you will find is very appropriate for me.
Oh,
it's
yeah?
a youth football one.
Oh, excellent. There you go.
SBS Cup back in the 90s.
Very, very on brand.
I haven't worn that one yet, but I will be wearing it. But thank you so much to Football Cult. They are an Australian-owned brand that produces a lot of T-shirts, including this one. So you can head to their website, footballcult.com.
I've got an old soccer shirt. It's based on the Phillips National Soccer League logo that I wear on the live stream sometimes. It's a good website, and I think it's important to have places like this that kind of keep that history and fan culture alive. So shout out to Anthony Siokos.
Yeah, exactly. And I see you wearing yours all the time.
Yeah, it's always in the office. I usually wear it in for the club shows with the NPL guys, you know, just sucking up to Melbourne Knights and so forth. No, just kidding. Let's go to the Nations League, because we've got to get our Euro wrap done. And
Before we go to it, Athos said last night he was so convinced. He said England were going to win the inaugural UEFA Nations League final. And I said, Athos. They're not going to be able to get past the Netherlands. So that's not going to happen.
Well, I don't think he banked on Gareth Southgate selecting midfield three of Ross Barkley, Fabian Delph and Declan Rice. But...
oh, I think he did because I read him the lineup.
Oh, did you? All right. Well, there's no excuses for Athos Syrianos then. Let's listen to the carnage.
Marcus Rashford, cool as you like. Beautifully certain and serene. And England have a semi-final advantage in the Nations League. And in the tie and De Ligt rose and equalised. He is a force, a colossus. Oh, Depay's in and Pickford has made a save. And Pickford will plunge again. Yeah! But Promes has established a Dutch lead in chaotic circumstances. England have shot themselves in the foot big time.
Well, how many times have I said this during the course of the game? England, you cannot dwell on the ball. Be complacent. You're going to get close down, put under pressure.
Well, that's another error, and Depay's onto it, and Promes is onto it, and the Dutch have wrapped it up. Amid yet more English defensive catastrophe.
Yes, unfortunately, England went down 3-1.
Those highlights with thanks to Optus Sport, of course. Some of the most shambolic defending and giveaways I've ever seen in a high-level football
match. What was Stones thinking?
What was Ross Barkley thinking? I mean, some of those awful giveaways in the back line. England got were the beneficiaries of one at the start to win that penalty, in which Marcus Rashford buried. But then from there, just three horrible defensive errors. Really, from the Dutch press, I suppose. They really put a lot of high pressure on England's back line, and they made a lot of errors playing out from the back. But I just think that midfield selection was just too experimental and too weak to really compete with the form international team in world football at the moment, which is the Netherlands.
Yeah, you summed it up pretty well. And especially when you're coming up against the likes of, you know, De Jong, you've got Van Dijk in defence. No one has dribbled past him in 64 appearances so far, which
Harry
is just
Kane's
incredible.
Harry Kane's not going to do it on one leg, is he?
I mean, no.
How did Harry Kane get selected for this game? I mean, Gareth Southgate's done a great job, but to pick a guy who's just sleepwalked through a UEFA Champions League final... has clearly not got over his injury and is just not in fit shape to play after a long season. Why are you picking him up front when you've got so many other options? It's puzzling.
It is puzzling. But then again, I don't know why he would have selected him, as you say, but I think that the Netherlands were too classy for England, and it's going to be interesting to see how they go against Portugal in the UEFA Nations League final. How do you see this one playing out? Because... in that match, we did see we do know that Frankie de Jong is leaving for Barcelona. He started. We saw De Ligt. He scored a goal, the opening goal. It was a trademark header from him, found the back of the net.
Yeah, he made up for his defensive error, actually, which gave away the penalty. But, you know, he scored so many of those headers. It's remarkable. I mean, surely teams know what's coming. They just can't stop it when he comes steaming in like that. He's got such a knack for it. His timing is unbelievably good. You know, the Netherlands have put together a really brilliant team with some names that, you know, a lot of people wouldn't have been familiar with or would have totally forgotten about, like Ryan Babel still going on that left flank. And they've
any relation to Marcus Babel?
No, he's
joking.
But Ryan's actually, you know, he's obviously used to play for Liverpool, and he's 31 now. It seemed like his best days were behind him, but now he's suddenly rediscovered his form for the Netherlands, still cracking on there. And they've got like role players to come in, the likes of Quincy Promes and Donny van de Beker as well, yeah. from Ajax, that memorable Ajax side. He could probably start for them, to be honest. So, you know, they've got a lot of talent. And
a lot of depth.
A lot of depth. And, you know, I think Gareth Southgate was honestly outcoached in this game because he couldn't adapt to the high pressure that the Netherlands were applying.
No, but when you look at that England squad that he did pick, it wasn't starting 11, Pickford in goal, okay?
He's the first choice keeper usually, yeah.
You've got Walker, Stones, Maguire, Chilwell.
Chilwell is definitely a more experimental selection, but he's been playing for Leicester this season. I mean, it's not the worst squad. That
Ali,
midfield three.
Barkley, Sterling, Rashford, Sancho.
That midfield three of Barkley, Rice and Delph is just, you know, three depth players who wouldn't usually start. You'd usually have the likes of Dele Alli in there with Ruben Loftus-Cheek's injury certainly didn't help. I think he's an important player for England. Jordan Henderson as well. So Jesse Lingard only came off the bench as well as Henderson. So they didn't start with their strongest side. And yeah, Harry Kane needs a break. He came off the bench, but I don't know why he was in the squad at all, given his injury problems. So yeah, very puzzling decisions from England. They have enough talent and a good coach to be able to get around this and learn from their mistakes. But heading into this final, Portugal versus the Netherlands, I think the Netherlands will win. I think they've got enough quality in possession. Ronaldo obviously is on fire to score a hat-trick, but you know, I think Portugal have overly rely on him, and Ronaldo up against Van Dijk and De Ligt, it's going to be a different proposition to coming up against that Swiss back line.
Yeah, and you'd like to think that De Ligt is going to be much more, as will Van Dijk, much more cautious about Ronaldo and marking him and, you know, not doing anything stupid. Not that they ever do.
I mean, Ronaldo's difficult because, you know, he can wait in areas where, you know, you can't really track him, just waiting in corners and wings where, you know, the fullback will have to go forward to participate in the attack and the centre-back doesn't want to go out of position. He'll just wait and try and get on your blind side, and then that one moment, that one, you know, devastating run. But I think De Ligt, having played against him this season with the Juve Ajax match, he'll be aware of his of how to mark him. Ronaldo did score in that first leg, but you know, I think they'll be able to handle him, keep him to, you know, maybe just one goal, and they've got the attacking quality to go score more than one down the other end. So I'm going for a 2-1 Netherlands win.
And I think that Ronaldo, also, we know how good he is. He's outstanding. He's arguably the world's best. He can score from free kicks. He can score from the spot. He can score from open play. So, you know, he's, you know, multi-dimensional in terms of his attacking quality. So I think the Netherlands will have to be aware of that, because we saw him score from a beautiful set piece in that match.
The first one he scored in a while, but, you know, that was ideal Ronaldo range. That was a real throwback to when he was knocking in free kicks left, right and centre for Madrid and Manchester United before that. So he's in great form, obviously, but I think the Netherlands will have enough in terms of being quality
across
the team.
They've got the right balance, don't they?
They've got a good balance.
Mid, up front, defence. I think they've got it all covered. Netherlands to win.
Yeah, and I think they're a big shout for the Euros next year as well. But Louise, that's just about all we've got time for this evening.
Oh, look, we've gone over time. We could talk for hours about football.
I mean, huge weekend coming up. Make sure you get around the Socceroos tonight, and then more importantly, the Matildas, their first World Cup game against Italy. Huge game in Australian football context. So Sunday night, 9 p.m. Watch the Tillies, get around them. I think they're going to have a fantastic World Cup, despite the injury promises. You know, the injury problems they've got, but I think they've got a big tournament ahead of them.
That's all we've got time for. If you've missed any of the show, head to FNR's website or FNR's SoundCloud. Go Matildas!
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.